We move on to Paul talking about sparks.
So in essence, it's a continuation of the speech presentation. He already explained to a certain extent. I didn't hear what I said so far.
Right, so we understand the nature of collaboration between two packages. So Sparks was indeed released about half a year ago, in fact, in February. And of course, it's a very early version. However, most key elements work, and we keep improving them. So this is the installer, which was written by Mike Hahn in Paul Adams' group in Berkeley. So there is a number of simple steps that one has to follow. It's a long process. It takes hours because it compiles all the dependencies. The package will include Eman2 in it, but not Eman1. So if you want any elements of Eman1, that will have to be installed separately. And it's done such that it shelters users from whatever might be installed on the workstation already. So these are the four groups that contribute to the project. This is me at UTH. At Baylor, this is, of course, Steve's group and all the people working on it. I only listed people currently working on the project. LBL, there are, in fact, two groups by Chao Yang and Paul Adams. This is Mike Hahn, who works for Paul, who wrote the installer. And, of course, Tom Waltz and Stefan contributed some Python elements. So this is rehashing of what Steve already said. The general strategy is to have everything nicely lined out in layers. So on the lower level, we have a C++ core library. And there are, in fact, two or three, if we include X-ray crystallographic CCTBX from Paul Adams. But basically, there is Eman2 and Sparks. They are kept separately for various reasons. One of them, which is somewhat unfortunate, is that the style of programming somewhat differs. It's just easier to go this way. In any case, on the higher level, we have Python functions. My approach to it, since I'm not very good in coding in C++, to implement all strategies in single particle strategies in Python. And that's how it's written. And also, parallelization, as Steve already said, is done on a Python level. All the graphics is taken from Eman2. At this point, there is no separate Spark graphic, although in the future, there will be a graphical user interface, which will be exclusively part of Sparks. So we also plan to provide bindings for external programs through sharing of data and generally processing. But that we envision as done on a very high level, which is the graphical user interface. So how that is all organized? Well, of course, the good question is about documentation. And this time, I was trying to take a very good care of it. We simply adopted the wiki platform, which probably most of you are familiar with, like Wikipedia. The beauty of it is that it's user editable. And unlike the source code, which one has to go through CVS, and it's sort of sheltered from casual users. Here I have no problems of giving access, and there is a button edit, so one can edit any section of the manual. The part that I like especially is that there are equations, so these are not just verbal descriptions, but one can actually see what's going on. And this is done in a, again, very simple way, so one can edit all these things in a transparent manner. So on the top level, we have things which we call applications or scripts. And these are all written in Python and are relatively short. There are very few which would be longer than two pages. And the distinction between Eman2 and Sparks is in these first two letters. So whatever comes from Sparks starts from SX. But as you saw probably on the previous, no, I don't have it. E2, these will be Python scripts that originated from Eman2. I will skip the syntax of it. So as I said, almost all that we wrote so far in Sparks is parallelized using MPI, and that means that the same command is simply run this way, and that means will be activated on 32 processors of the cluster. What is unfortunate about this approach is that MPI installation is cluster dependent, meaning it's customized. What it means in practice is that it will not come with the installer, and you would have to contact Wei in my group who does it with pleasure. It just requires installation of additional elements, and that's for some reason Mike Hahn couldn't do it. So now the beauty of it is that all these commands that are here used from Unix command line, yes, can be also used in a Python code just by skipping first two letters and putting all parameters here in a normal way, and that's a function call. What that means is that these strategies can be expanded and connected through customized Python code, however you would want to do it. There was a question about handling of CTF and CTF correction, this and that, and I forgot to raise my hand, I think it was 2 days ago. So the way it's done in Sparks is that there are two flags. One, it's CTF. If there is no flag, that's not an exclamation, that's one, meaning ignore. So all code as it is will ignore any CTF that you may have in the data. So that is helpful, for example, for negative stain or for just going through first run very quickly. Second is what I called raw, meaning the normal thing is that CTF is estimated from micrograph. The parameters are put in file headers. Particles are windowed from raw micrographs, and then CTF correction will be done whenever average is formed, or, as the case may be, 3D reconstruction. So this would correspond to a normal way of doing things, as probably is done in Spider, Iman, and other packages. I, however, expanded the code dramatically, and I added a flag CTF applied, which can be put in the data header. And that, what that means is that after CTF estimation, all micrographs are multiplied by the CTF. They are not corrected. Correction means something else. They are simply multiplied by the CTF. Then particles are windowed, and the same algorithms apply CTF correction, full CTF correction, again, when averages are formed. That not only decreases this problem with spread of the CTF, also things work much faster because I don't have to apply it each time I want to calculate an average or do the 3D reconstruction. So now let me walk through new methods very quickly. I have a new 3D reconstruction algorithm, which I'm particularly proud of. So this uses MPI parallelization, and I processed recently a very large data set. It's 365,000 projections, 150 square image size. So on 60 CPUs, that takes 45 minutes. I'm not sure whether you ever tried to calculate the reconstruction of this size, but trust me, it's a very good time. So main contribution of Chao Yang is the unified approach, in which I think Steve explained it earlier in his presentation somewhat. This is a method in which both the structure and alignment parameters are updated simultaneously. It's described in this paper, and he keeps developing it. He added CTF capability and other elements recently. My main contribution is to work on new algorithms which are much more accurate in terms of interpolation. So we call it non-uniform Fourier transform-based interpolation, and in this plot I show the error of rotation that can be found using this new interpolation approach. What that means is that I rotate the image by a known angle and then let the algorithm establish what it was. So that I set it to 2.5, and then the algorithm finds new angle, and I calculate the difference between what it is and what the algorithm found. So this new non-uniform Fourier transform, you see this zigzag, so this is in degrees, that is virtually perfect. This zigzag is the accuracy of the angle determination, as they say in many commercials, using other software packages, which should remain unnamed. So to make a long story short, the new method, this non-uniform Fourier transform, virtually eliminates the need for oversampling of the data. In addition to this very high accuracy, one doesn't have to worry about using a very small pixel size if the target resolution is about 10 angstroms, because the method is good to about 90% of NIQIS frequency. So this is what we are now putting in all our alignment algorithms. The large effort goes into a statistical method. So we put new code that was mainly, again, by Chao Yang for PCA. There is Varimax. There is new generation of clustering algorithms, which I already discussed earlier. This is the resampling work, or bootstrap, as Eva called it, and she already gave extensive introduction to it, so I can sort of skip it. And these are new elements which emerged from further development of resampling, which is what I call conformational modes, and sorting of projections of 3D. So here I'll just show preliminary results that I got from it. So that goes very deeply into what Eva discussed, which is, first, how to detect variability in 3D reconstructions, how to interpret them in terms of structural dynamics, and second, how to perform these three-dimensional sorting of projections. In this approach, it's way simpler than what was discussed so far during this meeting. And let me show you. So this is the recent example of the variance map. Now we use coloring. So the red means high variance level. Blue means elements of the structure which are not mobile. And then using this resampling and new approach, we can do things like that. This was drawn from a set of particles, which was 21,000 2D projections. And these are not 2D ever, no, not, these are not 3D structures put in some kind of order. These are the actual movements that the structure performs. Yeah, so this is the famous ratchet movement. You can see movement of L1. And this is another movement, which is somewhat strange, which is stretching of 30S subunit. So again, these are actual movements. These are not superpositions of 3D reconstructions. And then, without going through any multi-reference alignment based on this resampling, I can also sort projections and calculate reconstructions. So this is like sort of three-dimensional k-means, quite effective. And you can see these are reconstructions calculated from this data set of 21,000 particles. And one can easily see that there are settled differences. What does it all mean? I don't know yet, because it's work in progress. So I'll stop at this point. What's that?
How does it work, the conformational modes display that you showed us? What are you calculating?
I will explain it to you later. It's
is this the covariance of the...
It's analysis of the covariance matrix. But there is more to it, which I will gladly explain to you. So basically, this is interpretation of correlations within structure as movements. But I can also distinguish between movements and discrete states in the structure using the same technique.
So is Sparks more for like the advanced user, and EMAT2 is get you started in basic, or?
No.
What's the difference between the two, then? Yours has more algorithms than it, fancier algorithms, or?
Well, you know, the main difference are the contributors. In a sense, we keep Sparks as relatively open. And as I said, all of that is done in Python. So I sincerely hope that there will be more people contributing to it, because it's really not that difficult.
Can one do a whole reconstruction in Sparks now?
mean, there are all these, I skipped this slide, but you have all standard alignment algorithms, which is 2D alignment, 3D alignment, alignment of volumes, clustering, all of that is there.
So what's your user base right now? How many people outside of your own lab are you
doing? And outside of the people that were listed on the first slide, that I wouldn't know. I know about people who try to download it, but I'm not aware of anybody using it extensively.
What do you use, say, if you're working on somebody's reconstruction problem?
Well, I use that. As I said, I forgot to mention, we also have a run-through example. So that allows you to see how things are going. It starts from simulated data and goes through all the steps of alignment, ab initio structure determination, and finally all the statistical analysis, and that is all done within Sparks. So all elements are there, all basic elements of single particle analysis are there, plus some more, and I focused on these, which are, in my view, unique to the system. But all basic steps are there. Yes, I submitted a paper to Ultramicroscopy, and I can give you the draft. So that goes into some detail, how that works, what are the advantages, and what is the limiting accuracy, and other things like that. Yes. Yes, all of that is there. The thing is, I skipped it because of limited time. But we can go to this wiki page, and I can show you all basic commands. In other words, from this point of view, the same way a spider is, it's a generic system for image processing. So we have Python functions that do Fourier transform, cross-correlation, so on and so forth. And then on this higher Python level, they're all put together to create protocols of single particle. But basically, all image processing operations are accessible as Python functions. The system, I don't think that Steve explained it really. The system is designed such that when you add a function on C++ level, it automatically becomes visible on a Python level, and this is done through sharing objects. Objects are shared between Python level and C++ level. By object, I mean not only the image or the volume, but all the attributes which were assigned to it either on C level or on Python level. So you can move forth and back. So all the CPU intensive stuff is put on C++ level, but whatever happens there immediately becomes visible on Python level. Yes, so that's a part really which Steve is responsible for. And
That's what I was talking about before. I was saying you can add a new function. That's the same for the two. When you add a new function in EMAN 2 or in Sparks, it immediately is available in the other as well. They share the same core library.
In other words, you add the function to a library, and that goes through these factories or however you call it, and there is a very simple mechanism to add a new function. So you type in, using a blueprint, your C++ function, and then you type make install, and you can use this function from Python level. So that takes about 10 minutes. But most of what I could think about is already there. So if you have better ideas, then feel free to add. So, what do you mean by similar, in a sense?
Seamless.
Oh, no, you can read spider files. So certain things we keep in spider format, for example, volumes. Parameters in spider, as you know, are kept externally in so-called document files. So we wrote a whole bunch of procedures that can suck them into Sparks quietly, and then these parameters are stored in headers of HDF files. So the design of Sparks and Imantu is such that parameters are not external. They are kept within files. The reason is that eventually it should provide seamless transition to GUI.